a shot in the dark. Where he sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. I don't know what episode it is. I have no idea. 274 or something. Mid-270s. recording from my home studio lair. That's not true. I'm at my kitchen table. I love recording in my living room, in my dining room here, because that means that there's no one home. If I'm recording here, it means that no one's home, but there are problems though. Like my neighbor from down the alley, who I keep hearing now, is like, he has this really old Toyota truck. And he pulls up to like where he starts it up, backs it out, pulls up to right where the alley meets the road, which is right next to my house, right next to a window. And he sits there and revs it and runs it and tries to get it warmed up so they can go. I'm like, why didn't you do that back at your house down there? You know, but he does it. He does it right next to my house every single time. Yeah. So anyway, got the house to myself for a while today. Sorry, a little coffee slurp there. And yeah, doing the old show. It's a good time. Man, I tell you what, second day in a row working hard behind the counter. Just been busy. The shop's been busy. And you know what's funny? I like when the shop's busy when I expect it to be kind of busy. Because then I let go of trying to get anything else done. You know, but I had like two proposals and a couple of important emails and stuff I'm working on for Calix, my apostolate, and trying to get some stuff working. And I'm at the day job doing my thing, which technically is a part of Calix too, but it's kind of like a day job. You know, it's one of our clients that I'm embedded with and I kind of run their shop for them. So, but when I'm there, I'm pretty much managing a shop and working as a barista, you know, like actually pulling shots, working with customers and stuff. And it's just been busy enough to where there's just enough to keep you from having a really good conversation or getting anything else done. Yeah, it's been like that for 2 days. Just enough going on that it kind of makes it hard to do anything else, but not enough to where you can really get over in that I'm making coffee zen, you know. And I'm telling you, I know I seem so cerebral and so internal and, you know, I think so much and I talk about all these ideas and, you know, all this stuff on here. And so I seem like I'm that guy. I am really that guy. I am kind of, two of my, top, strengths finder, strengths when I first took are ideation and intellection, which are, you love ideas and you love to think. So I spend a lot of time just thinking about stuff, right? But I really need to get out of that sometimes. And there are certain things in my world like cooking, but really, man, being on a La Marzocco, three group La Marzocco Linnea with the kind of the right grinder and the right angle and everything with the right height. It's just, it's a place, that machine and that grinder and that height and that position is a place that I've been in so much over my life that I can just do it blindfolded. And when you really get me going and you give me some speed and you give me really something to try to keep up with, I'm never happier than when I'm just slammed making great coffee for several hours in a row. Now, I start getting frustrated after a while because I'm talking to all these people and I really want to be able to slow down long enough to have a conversation, and I keep getting distracted by the next drink. So I like shops that are a little slower than that. Sometimes they kind of come in pulses, so to speak, you know, but it's just been busy enough to where it wasn't, you know, it's kind of like when you're in traffic going to work. You know, I've been noticing this since I started driving a stick again. You know, it's like, you can't quite get into that high gear, but you can't stay in the lower gear either because it just keeps changing. And you're kind of in that in between, You know, maybe it's like the Lord, our Lord said, you know, to be hot or cold, because if you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out of my mouth. There's something about being on or off. You know, it's like if I can just go, oh, I'm not going to get anything done. It's super busy today. Great. Just go into Coffee's Inn and deal with it later. I'm good with that. But it's been 2 days of kind of like, not quite that, but not enough to get anything done. So it's kind of fun though. It's nice to, I got a few little sprints of making a bunch of coffee. Had, you know, and I had a group in the conference room today, and, we have a big whiteboard in there, and there's about six or seven people around the conference table. But when I went back over to kind of look in and check on them, they had covered the walls with these giant post-it notes. And I was like, oh, wow, you can do that? I guess I've never used those. Not these huge pieces of paper that are like post-it notes. And they'd put them up on the walls and written on them and then put them up on the walls. And they had, I think they were working on some kind of like, you know, legal document or some kind. They were, because they had articles and stuff. And it was like, I'm like, dude, I want to organize stuff. I want to think big like that. So maybe that's what, maybe this weekend when we're not celebrating, the 40th birthday of the good duck, Jim Laurent, good old ducky. Then maybe I'll go down there and, use the old whiteboard and, sort my life out with some big post-it notes on the walls. It sounds kind of fun, kind of into it. I love whiteboards, and I love like big spaces to kind of draw diagrams and list stuff and think real big. Good stuff. So, what's going on in the world? We got, it's really funny to see that, like, you know, everyone likes to think in this, like, right versus left. You know, these are these things, the political categories. There's conservative and there's liberal. And there's right versus left. And the tropes are the right is small government and less government infiltration into our lives, and the left is more, right? And then the right, you know, the right is one thing, and the left is kind of one thing, right? It's almost like the Saved by the Bell school of politics, and everybody knows you got your jocks and you got your geeks and your nerds, and they're two completely, and the jocks all come with biceps and like sweatpants and letter jackets, and the geeks all come with like pocket protectors and like tape on their glasses. I mean, it's a nice clean cut little reality, you know, and that's what we talk about politics, as if that's the case, as if all Republicans are this one kind of conservative and they're all conservatives, and that's what this means, you know, and vice versa on liberals on the other side of the aisle. And it's just funny seeing Trump come in here, and Trump obviously is like super pro business, but like the leaders of the major unions left met with him, like it was yesterday, and came away going, man, we are incredibly excited to work with this guy. Speaking of though, so there was a conversation that happened at the bar today, and it's interesting. One of my customers has a degree in engineering. He's a fairly conservative guy, and it's funny. I just want to, if this is true, I want to start, we just have to get it, start getting a little more Straussian in the way we watch Trump, because he said, yeah, we're going to go forward with these two pipelines. We're going to do this. This is going to happen. It needs to happen. And we're going to make it happen. It's going to be great. You know, and he signs this executive order. Then he makes this caveat that we have to do this with American steel. So this guy that has a degree in engineering says, well, here's the thing, is that there's no one in America making, no one really anywhere kind of making that big a pipe grade steel anymore, but definitely not in America. So someone have to like start making start making pipe like that. Now the question is, but he said you have to use American steel to do it. The problem is that American steel would be so expensive that all the people who are like holding the rights of this land and all this stuff and everything, there's just basically what he made the argument that by setting this forward, he pleased all the people on the right. And by saying it has to be done with American steel, he pleased all the union workers. It's a 28,000 jobs or something like that it's going to create. But evidently, with the cost of American steel and based on where the deal is now, it can't be done. So he may have just nixed these pipelines, but did it in a way to get conservative credibility with all the right and union credibility with the left. And if that's the case, I'm just like, well done. Well done, Mr. Machiavelli. Well done. I mean, that is genius in a chess playing with people's lives kind of way. I don't think of Trump as being that strategic and intelligent to do something that supple. But at the same time, if you were someone who was thinking on that level, the fastest way to get past people and get what you want done is to have everyone think you're a buffoon. Because then no one takes you seriously. They just look at your surface actions and criticize them or like them. And then you can just kind of like, you know, gosh, am I building an argument that Trump is the governmental Socrates? Am I really doing that? I hope I'm not. It's interesting. But anyway, so when I come back from the break, I want to get back on this right versus left kind of tropes and kind of like how this is kind of being defied right now. And just kind of throw some ideas and some conversation out here. And we'll just kind of see where this goes. Then I want to talk about this Women's March some more and some backlash that's happened from within that movement. I want to talk about this Planned Parenthood story that's going around. And, you know, something else is going to come up. It always does. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Old school coffee slurp exclamation point. I used to do that. People hated that. Sorry if you hate that, and I did it. I got to keep myself amped up. Got to keep the caffeine going. One of our customers said this morning that you really wished that there was like just a caffeine drip. We developed a new car accessory that you could like have, where it's like you would get in the car and there's like a permanent little insertion point, like a little plastic thing that's been inserted in your skin, and you just you start the car, turn the radio on, get your phone plugged in so you can listen to a podcast, reach up, pull down the little tube, hit the button to start the caffeine IV, and you just kind of, you know, just get in traffic and do your thing. It's like, I think it would work. I think it would save a lot of lives, especially in the morning commute. If you could just have that caffeine drip going right into your arm first thing in the morning, I know I would use it. Man, okay, I'm gonna admit something that I shouldn't admit on the air. So I've talked about this before. There is the medicine cup. If you're a caffeine guy, if you're a coffee addicted kind of human being, you know, there's the medicine cup is what I call it. It's the very first one. It's the first cup. And who was it? James Hoffman from Square Mile Coffee over in London wrote a blog about this, about how he's been. I've seen this. You go to a coffee convention, and you go stay in the hotel, and you will see these coffee luminaries coming downstairs, and somebody's like sponsoring coffee, or like, you know, they're doing like a pour over bar or something. And it's like, if the line's too long, I have seen serious coffee nerds, like serious dudes, go to the urns in the Hampton or Hilton or whatever, just like the big crappy coffee urns, and just get like their first cup of just absolute garbage coffee. Because it's just, I mean, the struggle is real, man. I mean, you need that first cup, you know? Anyway, so I got up yesterday morning and I made a cup of coffee in my Breadbox Media ripoff Yeti kind of travel mug, which I think works better than the Yeti. It's like, it like really, 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 really insulates. It's good. It's a good coffee mug. You should go to breadboxmedia.com and buy one of these things. I made a cup of coffee in this cup, and I even put a couple of pieces of ice in it, and it was just so hot that it was like I couldn't really drink it very fast. Traffic wasn't very bad, and I ended up getting to work before most of it was drank. So I left it in the car, and I went in and I made a fresh cup, you know, because I had to like taste the espresso after I kind of fixed it, kind of set the grind and stuff. And so then this morning I got up and I was just running a little close on time. I wanted to get down to the store before I wanted to go to the store and get some milk before I went into the coffee house to open. And I didn't get a chance to make coffee, and I was super tired. And it's kind of dry right now too. And so I keep waking up like kind of on the edge of a sinus headache, and just kind of rough, you know? And anyway, so I get in the car. And I realized this cold coffee from yesterday is sitting there. Now, in my defense, it has been basically airtight, and it was brewed properly, and it was basically in a refrigerator the entire time. So it wasn't as bad as just like, you know, getting the coffee off your desk, but it was like you made some coffee, didn't put it in the fridge, and then drank it the next day. But I drank the cold coffee from the day before because I just needed to wake up, man. So this is, so now it's time for me to, I've made a good confession. Now I have to make a good act of caffeination, and, for my penance, I'll drink 2 macchiatos and 2 cortados. Okay. Getting back to, how did I get on that? I have no idea how I got on that. Getting back to, this political thing. So you've got kind of your nice little categories, right and left, conservative, liberal, you know, and then this Trump guy comes in here. Right now. And like I said, I'm not a fan of Trump. I'm kind of becoming a slight fan of some of the things he's done so far, but I was, if you listen to the show, you know, I was like firmly never Trump, man. I mean, the guy, and I was one of those people that was freaking out maybe a little too hard. Anyway, but so here's a guy who's got an R behind his name that he acquired like 3 years ago, right? I mean, and he comes in, and yeah, so he's doing a lot of stuff that is fairly, you know, kind of right wing. You know, he's like, he just now signed today the executive order that will start them building a wall. Isn't telling us exactly how Mexico is going to pay for it. But it keeps saying that the Mexico is going to pay us back, and they have to say that they're not going to, but they're going to. I think what he's going to do is he's going to just put a tax on any wire transfers that go back to Mexico. Honestly, if you just shut down the illegal immigration, widened out the legal immigration, and then taxed everybody who worked, then you would have the increased tax funds to get it, you know. But I think what he's probably going to do, he's floated this before about how he's going to put a fee on any kind of wire transfers going back to Mexico from America. So until it's paid for, or until they make a cut a different deal to like help pay for it or something. But the point being is that I heard that if he kept, now he won't keep up this pace, there's no way he can, but if he kept up the pace that he's established in the first couple of days on executive orders, that he would end up in 4 years having more executive orders than the last 5 presidents combined. So this, the executive order thing and czars and all this concentration of overregulation and this concentration of power in the executive branch has been something that conservatives have been griping about for a while, right? And then this guy comes in. He's all conservative, right? He's right wing, right? And he's just using the heck out of this executive order, which, remember, George Bush was the one that started really turning all that power over to the executive branch and started assembling a lot more power in the executive branch and getting us used to an increase of power towards the executive branch, which Obama then dove right in behind after criticizing it and did it too. And so we're kind of used to it, but it wasn't just liberals that got us in this executive branch thing. But man, he's just executive ordering everything. Now, I mean, like I said, there's been several things that he's done that I think I'm a fan of. No, but here's what's interesting is this guy understands, if there's something he understands, let's look at this Dakota pipeline deal we were talking about, or the XL pipeline, either one of these pipelines. If there's anything he understands, it's cost of goods, cost of labor, all that stuff, whether or not a project is feasible to move forward with and all that. And if he really did make everybody happy on the right by just executive ordering both of these pipelines and then make everybody in the unions and everybody like super happy by saying that it has to be American steel and American labor, and in the process made it completely untenable that it could ever be done, but gain political credibility with both sides, that might be this kind of skill set this guy does have, is the ability to do that kind of stuff, because he does think in a deal, working parts of a deal kind of manner. But means we're going to have to really start watching these things that he does and kind of suss out what they really mean, because you might not be able just to take his actions on the surface any more than I think you can take his words on the surface. I think he said a lot of stuff to fire a lot of people up that by all accounts, people who know him, he says something that kind of fires up some kind of xenophobic fervor over here or something, and gets this one part of the base like all fired up because they're anti-immigrant or something. And then people came out during the campaign and went, look, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm friends with Donald Trump. That doesn't sound like the Donald I know. This is not what he's like behind closed doors. I think he's playing a part. I think he's learned from reality TV and he's learned from the business world how to use deals as rhetoric. And I think the deal is the new rhetoric in some sense. I used to say that design was the new rhetoric, and that design was to the moderns what rhetoric was to the ancients. But maybe in our overly capitalistic society, maybe design has become just decoration, and maybe the deal is the new rhetoric. Maybe the sculpting and the moving parts of a deal are the new rhetoric in some sense. It's I tell you what though, it's interesting though, the way watching this stuff go down is really interesting. Watching everything that he's doing, it's definitely not your normal Washington watching. It's not the normal, just kind of, you know, I can sit and listen to NPR on the way to work and just dissect every presupposition in what's in between the lines and what are the presuppositions. I can turn right around and listen to the conservative station and go, see, God, they're drawing a false dichotomy between this and this, and it's because they think that this is this, and they see everything through the lens of this, this, and this. And so with these two kind of like simple tropes, this right and left, just it's easy to kind of diagnose all this. This guy's something different. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know. I'm actually becoming slightly semi, dare I say it, cautiously optimistic. If anything, he's just going to shake up the board. He's just going to shake the board game, and we're going to have to start over again in some ways, the way things work. So he's definitely up. He's definitely changing the game. So, all right, let's go to the break. When we get back, let's talk about this Planned Parenthood thing. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Before we move on to the Planned Parenthood story, I want to hit one more little of these executive orders that Trump's put out. Man, I've gotten so political here lately. I hate that I'm so political. By the end of the week, I have a really great interview coming on Friday that will be very not political, I don't think. It'll be much more interesting early church meets what's going on in our world today as far as people's relating to God and whatnot. And I've got a more conceptual kind of like self-development kind of psychology, theology, philosophy kind of show kind of brewing. Just not ready to do it yet. So trying not to be just like, oh, hey, and today you're going to listen to more me talk about Trump, but it kind of is right now. So he signed an executive order to build the wall. I mentioned that. Oh, I remember what I wanted to mention about that. The Border Patrol came up and just went like, yay, you know, they're like all super stoked. Finally, we're going to get the tool to do our job. And it's interesting that if we're not going to protect our borders, everybody that's like all super against building a wall. Now, I'm against only building a wall. If all we're going to do is build a wall and keep everybody out, fine. But we have to back that up with a real change to our immigration system to get the jobs that Americans won't do that people right next door want and need to get them available in a way that we know who's coming in our country and we know who's here. They can come and go as they need to get back home without going through some stupid desert and getting held captive by some drug cartel or something. And at the same time, we get our taxes and all that stuff and they don't have to spend a bunch of money on fees, wiring stuff back. You know, we can work that out. Right. And then, at the same time, if we're not going to protect our border, if everyone's so against protecting our border, then it's like, I mean, why do we have a Border Patrol? And I think that that's how the Border Patrol is felt. It's like, why do we exist? Are you just putting us here as some kind of like show of, you have like, we're trying a little bit or something, but it's just a really, the last 8 years, over the last 16 or more years, have just been a weird kind of a, we have a Border Patrol, but we've really, really undergunned them for what they need. They don't have enough people and enough fence and enough tech to do what they need to do because really we kind of don't want them to do what they want to. And we don't want to look like we have an open border, but we kind of want to have an open border because, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. A lot of people on both sides, they all have these businesses that need this really cheap labor, but they don't want them legal because then you have to pay them a living wage or some kind of like actual money. And, you know, you'd have to like pay taxes on them, payroll taxes and all that. So we really kind of want it under the table, you know, and so act like we're kind of doing that. And then it's like, hey, doesn't that create a bunch of like human carnage where people are like out in a desert dying, trying to get here? Well, you know, you gotta crack a few eggs if you're going to make an omelet. I mean, it's like, it's been this weird kind of like, I'm like, no, let's do this in a humanitarian way. Let's take the option of being led through a desert by some coyote off the table. And then really do some serious changes to the immigration process. So people who want jobs and there's jobs here that can't be filled, they can come take them. I get it. We have this idea that like, oh yeah, you know what, when I was a kid, when I was in high school back in the 50s, we used to pick strawberries out in the fields in Oxnard to make some money during the summer. Great. Kids won't do that today. They just won't do it. It's like, you know, kids don't even want to work in fast food. My first job was like McDonald's. You know, my first job was McDonald's and I didn't get kept on after the probationary period. And I was told that I wouldn't be kept because I wanted to work up front and they wanted me to work in back. They said the owner of this McDonald's only wants women up front. And then once the guy's in the kitchen in the back, and I wanted to be on the machines up front talking to people, doing customer service and learning about that world. And sure enough, I got canned afterwards. They didn't keep me. So still bitter about that. I'm still bitter about that and being made to run the open mile. See, now we're 5 minutes in and I still haven't talked about Planned Parenthood. Okay, Planned Parenthood. So let's just switch gears here. Planned Parenthood. Oh, what are we going to do with him? So two things. Let's just focus on one. So Lila Rose from Live Action, the same people that like did those sting videos and all that, caught them selling body parts and all that. You would think that they would have like a national online class and they would say only one person is allowed to interact with anyone from the public in any way, shape, or form for each Planned Parenthood. And you all have to take this class about rhetoric and how to talk and how not to talk. But they haven't done that, right? And so Lila Rose calls them up. And so one of their arguments was, what's her name? Cecile Richards, the lady that runs Planned Parenthood. She's like, you know, prenatal care. We provide prenatal care, you know, important things like prenatal care. And so Lila Rose calls up like 100 Planned Parenthoods, like all over the place. Every one of them is like, we don't do prenatal care. Well, I don't. Why would we do prenatal care? I mean, we do abortions. I mean, it's like, I know. Yeah, the name is kind of deceiving. Like, there was all kinds of people at Planned Parenthood going, yeah, I've always thought that was kind of false advertising. Like, well, yeah. So what it comes down to is that two things. A, parenthood is not exactly what they're planning over at Planned Parenthood. In fact, parenthood is what you want to plan, then the absolute last place you want to go or can go to get what you need is Planned Parenthood. And hundreds of people that she called said, we don't do prenatal care. If you want to have a baby, we're no good to you. We can tell you if you're pregnant and we can tell you if you have an STD or something from the interaction, and you know what, we can help you kill that baby, but if you want to keep that baby, then we're not interested. We don't want to help you whatsoever. So they don't do prenatal care. And so what, I think her name's Cecilia Richards, is that her name? I don't know. I'll have to look it up. The woman that runs Planned Parenthood is always out there like on all these things and, you know, in front of Congress and all this. Oh, you know, important things like prenatal care and mammograms and cancer screening. And they don't do hardly any of that. And they go, abortions are only 3% of the things we do. So then that's another thing. If you go, even liberal news media places have went, okay, that's some pretty shady math there. Yes, if you define an interaction with a staff member like a procedure of some kind is all equal, so yeah, they took your temperature, yeah, they did a pregnancy test to see whether you were pregnant, then they did when they put the gel on your belly and they move it, sonogram, is that what they call it? Anyway, when they look inside your belly using technology and put it up on the screen where you can see the baby, they do that to see how long, far along it is, so they know what kind of abortion to give you, right? So they've given you a test to see if you're pregnant. Then they've went and saw how far along you are, so they know what kind of abortion you're going to need. And then they give you an abortion. And then they give you like some contraceptive care afterwards. They consider those all different interactions, right? So that test, that sonogram or whatever it's called, is that what it's called? It doesn't sound right to me. The special look inside tech thingy. when they do all that, they're doing that all so that they can give you an abortion. And I think it was Live Action did another video where they're like, okay, well, let's look at that. If we took that same idea, we go, You're a steakhouse. You sell steaks. No, we sell steaks only are 3% of what we sell. You're the Sizzler. You sell steaks. No. We have baked potatoes and we have rice pilaf and we have salad bar. We have all these different things on the salad bar. We have breath mints. We have soda. We have ice in the soda. Of all the things that we sell, of all this, look at all the items we that you can get in this place. A steak is only like 3% of it. Well, we would go, that's a cute story. You're a frigging steakhouse. I mean, so I mean, like, yeah, Planned Parenthood, that's a cute story. You're an abortion provider. And the main point of you being an abortion provider, which I thought was so weird that several people in this video literally said that. The person at Planned Parenthood said, yeah, we don't do prenatal care because we do abortions. That would just kind of be a contradiction, wouldn't it? They literally said that. The person answering the phone at Planned Parenthood let me rephrase that. The person who used to answer the phone at a particular Planned Parenthood said that, right? It's like, that's absolutely crazy. One of them on video that they said, oh yeah, that's how I've always thought that was kind of false advertising. We don't really plan parent. It's like, so to sum up that whole thing, down to Planned Parenthood, Parenthood is not what they are planning. Now I want to talk about, and we're going to have to get into this mostly after the break because we're coming towards the end of a segment here. And I want to make some time to talk about this, the internal collapse of the marching factions from the woman's side the other day. I want to talk about the claim that this is all women's health care a little bit. And I'm going to rant a little bit, and you've heard me go through this before, but in this context of them having called up hundreds of these Planned Parenthoods and been told on all these occasions they don't do prenatal care. Well, I don't know of any clinic that does prenatal care. We don't do that. It's kind of false advertising, huh? I mean, but I want to talk about the word health care, the words health and health care, when we get back and see if that makes any sense. You're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the colored glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Final segment, the final lap. You know, talk about abortions, healthcare, women's healthcare, Planned Parenthood. Then we're going to get into the march and some flack from the march. But I just wanted to point out there was a really great meme. I put it on my Facebook page, and Leo from Breadbox Media, from the Leo Brown Almost Hour, founder of Breadbox Media, commented on it. It's like, so you know how people are doing like the Trump picture of his inauguration, then the Obama picture, then they put like an even bigger crowd, like the Queen or Pope John Paul II. Somebody put the biggest one I've ever seen yet, and it was Oasis, the band, like at some festival. So I was on a whole rant about, you know, yeah, we're going to build a wall. It's going to be great. Yeah, we're going to build a big wonder wall. It's a wonder wall. It's going to be big, a bigly wonder wall. And it's going to be awesome. And we're going to make YouTube pay for it, you know? Oh, so funny, dude. You just have to find the humor in all this where you can. All right, so last little bit about Planned Parenthood story. Okay. I've been through this 100 times. You're welcome to just not listen to this part. Let's just talk about this word health for a second. Okay. Health. Let's just pull back away from people and stuff. Let's just talk about mammals. Let's talk about zoo mammals. Let's talk about when they get some animals and they put them in a zoo and they try to replicate the environment. They try to replicate the diet. They do all the stuff. They figure out all stuff. When do they know they've really got it? And they all do cartwheels and do high fives. And these, you know, these vets and these zookeepers, I mean, they really just like, they figured it out. We figured out how to keep the green Mongolian zebra in our zoo and make them healthy. When they procreate, when the two green zebras get together and make a third green zebra, they're like, oh my gosh, we got the diet and the environment right because they're healthy, right? See, Planned Parenthood, this is open letter to Planned Parenthood. When a woman who's healthy and a man who's healthy have intercourse, now see, maybe this is like, I'm having the birds and the bees talk with Planned Parenthood. See, Planned Parenthood, when a mommy and daddy love each other very much, they make a special hug. And when they make that special hug, if the mommy is healthy and the daddy is healthy, then the woman gets pregnant and she has a baby in her belly. Yeah. See, I mean, that's the level we're at. We're like explaining, talking to Planned Parenthood, but I don't want to have a baby. I mean, it's like a 5-year-old. It's like trying to explain this. That's why we don't tell them that early. We wait until they're ready to hear it. Evidently, Planned Parenthood, not really ready to hear the birds and the bees yet. They need to grow up. I mean, they're not mature enough to understand how this works. But I'm going to just break the silence. I'm going to let you know, Planned Parenthood, when a healthy mommy and a healthy daddy make the special hug, the mommy gets pregnant. And if the mommy gets pregnant after making the special hug with the daddy, then we know that they're healthy. Now, sometimes, and it's really, really sad, they're not healthy and they make the special hug and they keep making the special hug over and over again. And they make the special hug a whole lot and they still don't get pregnant. And so they have to go to a special doctor that can figure out why the special hug isn't making a baby, right? And see, that's called health care, because health is when what's supposed to happen, what normally happens, what's designed to happen, happens. That's health. So if you put the fern in a pot and it's big enough and you give it the right food and you put enough water and enough sun, but not too much sun, not too much water, and the plant grows, it's healthy, right? We call that health. And see, with mammals, with animals in general, that don't just sit and suck in some nutrients and get bigger. And even then, you know, they have ways like seeds and fruit and stuff and like pollen, you know, they make more of them too. And see, that's when a plant is healthy, right? So see, when organisms can beget more organisms, that's called health. Now, when that doesn't happen and you have to intervene and try to take care of that health, we call it health care, right? Because the health is not happening, right? So if you would then try to do something, like let's say that mommy and daddy try to make the special hug, and so you created a special piece of plywood that fits right between them. You put this plywood between them, so when they make the special hug, they can't make a baby. See, that would not be health care. That would not be taking care of the health. That would not be moving them towards what is healthy. Or if you did something else to keep that from happening, or you subverted that and you, I don't know, took the baby out of the mommy's belly after mom and dad made a special hug. I mean, that would not be health care, because health is when that happens, right? See, that's, there you go. So I've just now explained the birds and the bees to Planned Parenthood. See, in that thing when the mommy and the daddy make the special hug and then the mommy gets pregnant, has a baby in her belly, it's so cute, right? That's called parenthood, right? And that's what you say that you're planning. You're planning parenthood. So you should probably, now that you got it all figured out, now that I've explained it to you, Planned Parenthood, then now you know, and knowing's half the battle, just like G.I. Joe said. So now you can fix it. Now you can start planning parenthood, because what you've been doing is not healthcare. It's not one. And let's be serious here for a second. Let's go out of the realm of animals, out of the realm of just mammals. Let's just look at the human person, but this is probably true for most mammals, I would think. If, let's go even to gender. What makes a man different than a woman and a woman different than a man, right? What is the thing that is the most unique? Well, that would be gender, right? That would be biological sex, which, don't tell anyone, they're the same thing. Biological sex and gender are the same thing. Anyway, so men, if they don't have enough testosterone, which is kind of the chemical that kind of makes them kind of what they are, makes them flourish, and they get really sick. They're turning out, they found out a lot of problems. That's why a lot of doctors are bailing out of soy for men, because it's a phytoestrogen and it's causing badness in men because it's knocking down their testosterone, right? Women, when they get older after menopause and they start having lots of health problems, what do they do sometimes? Hormone replacement therapy, HRT. They do that to men too. What are they replacing them? They're replacing it with estrogen, right? Why estrogen? Because it seems like the thing that makes a man flourish and what makes a woman flourish, qua man, qua woman, as their gender, is this thing that makes them fertile. It's almost like that's kind of what the point is for them to be alive and be healthy, to make more and protect and feed and raise their offspring so that they can then repeat the cycle. It's almost like we're a member of the animal kingdom, in addition to being smart and having an interior life. So there you go. So woman's healthcare would be really, really centered around that fertility, wouldn't it? And around that process of making the babies with the special hug and daddy. All right, enough explaining the Planned Parenthood. We have a few minutes left, and there was a really great story. And I talked about the left wing identity politics snake eating its own tail a few months ago, and man, it's really kicking in. So they had this big women's march, right? And if you haven't seen it, my God, there was just vagina stuff everywhere. You know, I'm reminded of that quote from The Big Lebowski where it's like, men, vagina, men find it hard to say, you know, I have to admit, I have a little hard time saying, but there was just, everything was vagina, this vagina, that blah, blah, and all kinds of like slang words, starting with a P about that. Obviously, like I said before, if I were a woman and we had just or elected a guy that bragged about being a sexual predator, I without being allowed to do so, I would probably be mad and marching in the street too. The entire left just lost an election by ignoring an entire segment of the population. And then 2.5 million women go march in the streets. And all I'm seeing from the right is a bunch of people mocking them and critiquing them. Take a note. You might want to engage the people you're ignoring or seem to have nothing in common with, because when you don't, you lose. That's what just happened to the Democrats in the Rust Belt, or the America's industrial heartland, as the case may be. But here's what's interesting. So sure enough, transgender activists have come out of the woodwork and started griping about this woman's march and griping about how many signs, costumes, all this stuff had to do with vaginas and fallopian tubes and uteruses and all the plumbing and parts that make a person a girl and not a boy, right? And why? Because, and that, what I have to find it, but the money quote was along the lines of, it's almost like they're saying that having a vagina is essential for woman. Oh, man. I mean, this is stuff you just can't make up. So it's funny, the TERFs, I can't wait, something, something feminist, the traditional something, something feminist. They're like the old school, you know, we're women, they're men, women are women and men are men, and we need to have our rights. I mean, they are just completely at odds with the modern young kids who are like, well, who cares if she's the first woman president? Maybe she'll decide she's a man next week. It's like, they just cannot figure it out. And that feeling that I get every so often, like, almost every day now, where you wake up and you feel like you're that character in that future dystopian movie reading the crawl on the movie, like in Children of Men or something like that, some weird kind of like modern dystopian thing, and you feel like you're that person. Yeah, like you couldn't make this stuff up a few years ago. It would have been considered science fiction, social fiction. Anyway, man, it went fast today. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.